the writing was on the wall that there's going to be a lot of contraction in print. For the first time, it was getting easier and easier to launch digital sites thanks to businesses like WordPress, right? So suddenly you could launch a beautiful professional looking site for much less than it would have cost previously.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Alexia Brew has been a major force behind the wellness industry's success, an industry which has grown to over $4.5 trillion. Her story of success is extremely relevant for anyone trying to start a business today during the current global pandemic. See, Alexia founded Well and Good, which has become a digital media powerhouse, back in 2009, right around the time of the great financial crisis. She didn't let a global recession stop her. She went after her dream without ever looking back. Her story is inspirational, and her perseverance allowed her to build a company which she eventually sold to the publicly traded Leaf Group in 2018. I love Alexia's story because she pursued her dream and she built a business around her passion for wellness. She was successful in an industry she loved deeply. There's nothing better in business than having success doing something you love. So as an avid fitness and wellness fan, I was beyond excited to talk to Alexia about the current state of the wellness industry and all the major challenges that so many companies in the space are facing right now. She was the ideal person to talk to get a good understanding of where this massive industry is heading. So I had my chance to interview Alexia, and I wanted to start by asking her how it all came together back in 2009 to start Well and Good.
Sure. So Robert, thanks so much for having me. I'm so thrilled to be on your pod, which is one of my go-tos.
I love that.
So Melise Galula and I, we knew each other from print journalism, and we had been covering health and wellness throughout the aughts. And so for us, it didn't seem new. It seemed like this is the way the world was heading. And I would say there were two things happening in 2009 when we first launched the site. One was that we could see that print journalism, you know, after the 2008 financial crisis was changing forever, right? Like so many of the magazines that I worked for were getting smaller and smaller or going out of business altogether. You could no longer make the kind of living that you could make in the aughts sort of after the financial crisis. So the writing was on the wall that there's going to be a lot of contraction in print. And for the first time, it was getting easier and easier to launch digital sites thanks to businesses like WordPress, right? So suddenly you could launch a beautiful professional looking site for much less than it would have cost previously. And so we as journalists had so much passion for wellness and where we thought it was going in 2009. So we were at this moment in our careers where I think, you know, a lot of people were being experimental in that time of crisis because their livelihoods had changed. And, you know, we just went for it and we got wellandgoodnyc.com. And our aspiration really at that point was to be like New York Magazine for people who cared about wellness. We didn't get wellandgood.com. We didn't think that was going to be an issue. We just started publishing content.
I love that. And I love that how crisis breeds ingenuity. And it sounds like being in a crisis now and one we're going through as a country, I think there's going to be a lot of businesses that come out of this. But for you at that time, was it difficult to say, hey, let's do this now? Was there hesitation just because of the economy? Were you just kind of all on board and say, let's go for this?
Yeah, we took about 9 months where we were sort of testing it and we each had other things going on professionally. We were super committed to, you know, our publishing schedule, but we said, hey, let's try this for 9 months. Let's see if we can build up a following that extends beyond our family and friends. And, you know, if that's
mom and dad.
Exactly. If that's the case, then we'll go all in and we'll both focus 100% on Well and Good. And that's what happened. So, you know, 2010, we both left our other, you know, professional obligations and just 100% single-mindedly focused on growing well and good.
So when you started it, right, you still have other obligations. You're kind of starting it as this side hustle, but side business that you're hoping is going to do well, which of course now in hindsight, it did. But the thing I look at it, especially with a consumer brand where you're trying to attract eyeballs, there's so many people who try this. How were you guys able to get that traction?
You know, I think we were doing some things differently than other publications at the time. So A, because we were so focused on local, and that was, you know, we were the only people really writing about what was going on in New York City, the businesses that were opening, the spin instructors, yoga teachers, nutritional gurus who were starting to become the new celebrity chefs, the new people that people were going to for advice. And so because no one else was really covering it, it just built an organic following and a super engaged one because these people weren't finding that content elsewhere. And then I think we started writing about fitness and wellness in a different way than the legacy publications at the time were. So like The Self and The Women's Health and all those great publications, but they were still writing about fitness and wellness in a blast belly fat, fit into your dress kind of way, not as an amazing, fun, delicious lifestyle on its own. So not to like toot our own horns, but like, I think we were part of that sea change around the joy that people could take in their wellness practices.
How important was the boutique fitness boom that happened? I would say really going back from that time to, does it correlate with why Well and Good did so well?
I think it does. I mean, I think for me, the fitness piece was what got me into wellness. I've always loved working out. I was a competitive swimmer growing up. And Melise, it's interesting, like she was super into the beauty space. So we each sort of taught each other and it was really nice and to get helped Well and Good, be really well-rounded. But I think that when SoulCycle opened in 2006, that was completely different. Like they were really the first people to think about exercise as something that could be fun and entertaining and inspiring. And they were bringing in instructors in a whole new way and, you know, hiring instructors, not just for their fitness credentials, which is obviously a given, but also for their charisma and their ability to like inspire a large class. So I think that was transformational. And then you saw lots of other fitness businesses launch based on, you know, what SoulCycle was doing so well. So it was an incredibly exciting time where almost every month, you know, a new concept was opening. And that's actually how our events business started, because we started doing monthly meetups at the different boutique studios that were opening. So yeah, this was hugely important.
Interesting. So going back to that time, and you know, you said you finally stepped away from your other obligations, or both you and your partner stepped away. Was there that like key inflection point where you were like, hey, this is really doing well and I'm going to just focus on this? Because in digital too, it's like you have to drive revenue as well. So how'd you get to that point? Again, I'm just so amazed because it's so hard to build a business just to start, especially in what you did.
Yeah. So something that we did that was a little bit different is we actually started selling advertising programs in 2010, even when we had like 1200 people on our mailing list. So a lot of other media companies take the point of view of we're going to build the audience to a certain critical mass, and then we'll start monetizing it. And for us, we didn't really have that luxury because, you know, we needed to start supporting the site. I mean, even before you get to salaries, there are other things, your server and all the different tech expenses. So we got out there really early and we started working with small local advertisers and came up with these monthly packages. And it taught us from the beginning, like how to work with partners in that way, how to create custom content. We had events that we were creating for partners from 2010 on. So it was a great learning for us, even though the fees that people were paying were nominal at best.
Yeah, but you know, I think the important thing to remember, and for our listeners too, is right from the beginning, I think that old model of, you know, I'm going to go raise money, I'm going to build a community, and then I'm going to be able to monetize it. What I love about your story, it seems like, is right from the beginning, and I love this about entrepreneurs who do this, is right from the beginning, you wanted to be profitable so you can grow the business. Now, did you ever think about raising outside capital? Did you ever raise outside capital, or did you just build the business up that way?
We never did raise outside capital. We certainly thought about it a lot, especially as we were really starting to scale in 2014. And, you know, we looked around at other media companies that were raising, and we sort of understood the growth expectations that that puts on a business. And we really wanted to maintain focus on being a site for women around wellness. And then when you have a lot of venture money or whatever type of money coming in, it's like there's a lot of pressure to expand. And we didn't want to be in a position where we would have to launch Well and Good for Men or whatever it might be that wasn't part of our DNA as a brand. So yes, we just wanted to maintain creative control. And, you know, there's this Frank Gehry quote that I love, and it's the greatest source of creativity is a timeline and a budget. And so for us, not having resources just made us sort of more creative and scrappy, and that served us well.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. We all know that the work you do matters, no matter where you do it from. And nowadays, we are all doing it from a lot of different places. The good news is, I know a trusted company called WebEx. WebEx provides simple and reliable video communication tools that will allow you and your team to connect and collaborate securely. WebEx can take care of business anywhere you are. And no one doing business right now can afford to have their video conference bombed or their privacy compromised. WebEx is perfect, as it allows you to work remotely and, most importantly, securely. When it comes to remote work from home and you need to get stuff done and security matters, you can definitely trust WebEx. Look, I know there are heads of state, governments, schools, hospitals that all trust WebEx. It is definitely my choice for secure video conferencing and collaboration. Oh, and another thing I love about WebEx, WebEx can do virtual happy hours and weddings too. That's right, hashtag life on WebEx. So if you can imagine it, WebEx can build the bridge to get you there. And we're back. I was just saying that for the business right now and for businesses, like when you, I've never raised capital personally and I've built businesses that way, and I think it makes it a lot harder, and it makes you more effective, and you don't have that cushion to kind of do things. And I think that seems like it made you a lot more effective. So how did you really scale and go from 2010 to 2014 and go from, I assume, a local play to more of a, you know, now really worldly play?
Yeah. So what was interesting is that early on, even when we were covering hyper-local stuff like Juice Generation versus Juice Press and SoulCycle versus Flywheel and all these sort of fun insider baseball stories, 70% of our traffic was coming from outside New York State. So it was really fascinating that there was this interest in wellness that was percolating everywhere. And it became clear to us that we needed not just to be a local site, but that we could write about wellness more generally and from a sort of service and lifestyle standpoint with pieces that would serve a more nationwide and even global readership. So we started publishing, I would say, articles that were relevant for people everywhere in 2012, but we had this Well and Good NYC URL. And
right,
I didn't really realize how limiting that would be and that no one would really think about us as a national site, whether from an audience perspective or with brand partners and stuff. So starting in 2012, I was trying really hard to purchase the wellandgood.com URL. So that's definitely advice for entrepreneurs, is don't launch without all your URLs in place for whatever your business is. And so I would write this guy every 3 months asking him to sell me the URL.
And I'm sure the more he saw you doing well, I am sure the harder it got to acquire that URL.
Well, it's funny. Then there started to be interest from other people, as it was interesting. So someone else tried to buy the Well and Good URL and emailed me, and he said, "You've been trying to buy this from me for years. Finally ready to sell it."
And you got it done.
We got it done. Of course.
Right. So you obviously, you build this, the business up. There have to be
we always hear about the stories of entrepreneurs, and you know, you always see the good stuff. You see you building your business and selling it and growing. But like, what were some of the biggest challenges to you getting this business going and making it profitable?
I think for us, one of the both the biggest challenges, but also a blessing, was the size of our audience. So scale is obviously such a big deal in media, and we didn't have that. You know, there was a long time we had under a million monthly uniques, but we had a super engaged and influential audience, meaning that people reading Well and Good were also the ones giving their friends advice on what to do and what to buy. So we tried to just really focus on what made our audience special, because we couldn't offer brands scale. And so we were able to work with a lot of national advertisers, you know, starting in late 2013, even though we had a small audience. But I would say growing the audience was hugely challenging, because, you know, we didn't really understand early on how audience development works. It's a sort of discipline and department unto itself at media companies. These still were the kind of the early days of digital. So audience being, you know, an audience development specialist was fairly new. Now we have a built out team that's looking at all of our different platforms, from email to SEO to social to direct to referral partners. And it's, you know, fairly sophisticated. But at the time, we didn't know any of that stuff. So building the audience was hard. But it also meant that everyone who came was organic, and they were super passionate, and it was a very loyal readership.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I was thinking that without all of that help, the help that when you do have a department that does that, everything has to be organic. So you have this incredible following, which is really a targeted focus group. And how did you then take it from the business it was and then start incorporating? You became much more than, let's say, a digital site, but you started to do a lot of experiences and events. And was that a big turning point within the business?
It was. So we had started doing them from the beginning, but not from a business standpoint. It was just coming out of our enthusiasm for all the boutique fitness studios opening up and wanting to gather, you know, our New York City readers and sort of celebrate in person, get to know them. We learned a ton about who our readers were and what they were looking for. But then I would say in 2013, it became more of a business priority when we realized, hey, wellness is such an experiential lifestyle. We have the ability, through knowing so many of the amazing instructors and teachers in this space, to program talent really well. And then we're also able to deliver an amazing audience. And wow, that's something that brands are really looking for. So in 2013, we really started amping up our events business. And then, I mean, we were doing like 30 events just for one single brand in 2014 and 15. There was women's activewear brand that we started partnering with in 2014. And they were really transformational for our business. And events were a huge part of what we did for them. So that's when we really grew events into its own department.
What types of things were you doing for them? And then when were you like, oh, wow, we could be doing this for a lot of other brands as well?
Yeah, so we were doing everything from fitness classes in their stores, but we were doing a little bit differently, as we were producing them a lot more. And then we were also hiring, like having great talent come in and teach them, because what we wanted was to bring like the most popular instructor from wherever it is, so that we were really able to elevate the in-store experience into something that, you know, felt a little more premium. We also did something, we did a roadshow that took people, went to six cities across the country, and we were partnering with Exhale and Athleta and creating these pop-ups all across the country. And then we just started to see a lot of inbound interest for our events, and it started to become more and more clear that this was something special that we were able to do that larger media companies weren't. And it just grew from there. And now we have our own quarterly retreats, which are obviously on hiatus right now with the whole COVID situation. But before all this, we had a really thriving retreats business, as well as a monthly talk series.
Yeah, no, I love how you went from becoming this overarching brand about everything wellness, aside from just being a digital publication. And a lot of companies now, and a lot of media companies especially, have had to go that route, but you guys were set up perfectly for this. And I want to get back to that, because so much has changed now, obviously, And I totally want to get your thoughts on live experiences, live events. But I want to go first to the point where you sold the business. So how did that come about? And were you approached by, like, were you thinking of selling? Give me the story behind that.
Yeah, so we had been independent. We hadn't raised money and we were growing really nicely. Revenue and profitability was like doubling year over year. Our audience was growing also at the same kind of clip. So everything was going really well. But at the same time, we could also see the writing on the wall that, you know, I mean, scale was becoming even more important. And you started to see, you know, between Facebook and Instagram and Google, they are taking, you know, depending on what numbers you're looking at, anywhere from 60 to 80 cents of every ad dollar, right? So I think, you know, maybe people outside media don't realize how little is left for publishers of the overall ad spend. And so increasingly, you have agencies and brands wanting to be more efficient and spend their money with fewer, bigger advertisers. That's just, that trend was taking place and we were watching it happen. And so even though people would really want to work with us, it's a lot of additional work to onboard more partners. So we just started to think about that and understand, you know, we were seeing consolidation starting to happen. It's very expensive to be an independent media company because you're having to pay for these things like Comscore and all of these other digital tools without the benefit of spreading that cost across a larger organization. So as much as like we loved the focus that we got to have on our brand as an independent company, we started just talking to people, understanding that that process takes a really long time. You know, we never did a formal process.
Telling everyone and putting it out there.
Not at all. And, you know, we weren't sort of for sale at all. Right. We were starting to explore partners that might make sense for us longer term. And I think for us, that was a good sort of mindset to go into things with, because you never want to be in a position where you have to do anything, right? So we could kind of sit back and take our time and meet people, almost like dating.
Yeah. No, which is great, because when that happens and, you know, you're not out there because you're selling, you're doing good, but you don't have to. It seems like, I know for me in my past, like we've always were kind of at the top and had opportunities with multiple parties. But how did you finally decide or come to terms with selling to Leaf Group?
Yeah, so it was great that our relationship with them started so organically. We were doing an audience growth partnership with them and we got to know them through that and just realized, A, they were really great, super high integrity people, and that they had a lot of skills, you know, around SEO and tech and engineering that we didn't have. And they were really interested in Well and Good as a premium brand in the fitness and wellness space. It was, wellness was something they were already really excited about because they have livestrong.com, which is a resource site. You know, it's fantastic, but it's for people a little bit earlier on in their wellness journey than Well and Good. So the two sites were really complementary. And then together we could be this sort of giant fitness and wellness portfolio for brands. So there were so many things that made sense. And you know, it really just evolved from there.
How have you personally adjusted to that? Being, you know, someone who was running your own business, calling all the shots, doing everything, to selling the actual business and then really going to work for another company?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly very different. I think, you know, that's why I think for entrepreneurs, it makes sense to really spend the time getting to know the people that you're going to be working with, right? So there can be as few surprises as possible. I think, you know, what's been interesting is you go from being single-mindedly focused on your own business to being part of a broader portfolio of brands. And so, A, you have to think about how you fit into this larger landscape. And that's both really intellectually interesting and broadening. But then, you know, you do give up a little bit of the focus on your own brand. But for us, it's been great. There are so many learnings across the portfolio with Livestrong, with Hunker, which is another site that they have. And obviously, like all the expertise they have on the technical side. And then they have a whole marketplace side of the business, which includes businesses like Society6, Saatchi Online Art, and the other art fair. So they're really committed to both fitness and wellness and then art and design as two key categories.
Yeah, it seems like they have a lot of these lifestyle categories, and it seems like they're able to monetize some of these strong brands, which Well and Good, you know, when I think of Well and Good, for me, and being an avid reader within and being active in the wellness space, like Well and Good to me is like that, the like prominent brand. And I could imagine, have you been able to, so since that acquisition, have they been able to help you expand audience, expand into other areas to drive revenue?
They have. Like, video was something that we always really wanted to be able to grow into, but just didn't have the resources to do. And going back to our conversation earlier, like, you know, there were so many people that lost so much money when everyone went into social video and, yeah. you know, 2016, like, because we didn't have money, we luckily did not lose our shirts with that. But
so, you know, great how luck sometimes just plays a part. And like, I love that.
But video, you know, more long form video was something we were really interested in. We felt our audience wanted. And so thanks to Leaf Group, we've been able to invest in building out a really robust YouTube platform now with about 10 different series, from, you know, at home fitness to something called Alt Baking Bootcamp, which obviously with all the baking going on, is doing really well. Another cooking show. We have a show called What the Wellness, where our host, you know, takes people through all these really interesting wellness experiences. So YouTube has been really fun. We have on-site video, obviously, as well. To be able to do that, we're launching a podcast.
I love it.
2020. So a lot of those things we are able to do that we wouldn't have been able to do before unless we'd had like a sponsor in place and et cetera, et cetera.
Let's talk about the wellness industry now. And I'd love to get your perspective. So much has changed in so many different areas within wellness. What do you make just in terms of what's happened now with so much being done virtually, and especially for Well and Good, where you were focused on this boutique fitness industry, which is in studio? Can you give me what you think has happened? What's really going to change? What will go back to normal? I would love to get your insight on what you think.
Yeah. So 2020 will obviously be, you know, there's so much change happening, decades of change happening in months right now. I would say, you know, in wellness, what's been interesting is, like, I think for so this COVID-19 crisis has been a wellness wake-up call for a lot of people, yeah. right? We always talk about wellness wake-up calls, and they happen for different people at different life stages. And I think we're certainly seeing a lot of people get interested in wellness right now. And that's fantastic. And for us, you know, wellness is all about practices, right? It's not about products. It's really about practices that are free to incorporate yeah. into your life. So I think the wellness industry has certainly, you know, grown massively over the last decade and is now $4.5 trillion. And that's great that there are so many options. But I also think a lot of people don't love the how it becomes a sort of commoditized lifestyle. And I think at its most fundamental, it's not, because it's about practices that we can all do for free. So, and that's what we really try to be about at Well and Good, because we want it to feel super accessible from a price standpoint, from a convenience standpoint, super inclusive. So I think that's important to say. And hopefully in this moment, people are able to find all kinds of tools that are free that they can incorporate into their lives. I think for the industry, like, COVID has been obviously like completely devastating for all of the in-person businesses. And then it's massively accelerated a lot of other things like digital fitness, telehealth, healthy grocery. So, you know, this is all sort of ongoing, and where things are going to land after this, you know, going back to fitness as sort of the bedrock and sort of what got me super excited about wellness, I really do worry about all of these studios that, you know, I love so much, because I think there's something really special about the communities that they build. And it's amazing to go into a studio and have that sort of third space in your life that's between work and home, where you can blow off steam. And I think people really miss that. So as fantastic as digital fitness is, I don't think people want to have every aspect of their life happening in their homes. And so I think the next year will be hugely challenging for the fitness studios, because when they do get the go-ahead to reopen, A, you're going to have people that are wary of coming back to the gym. It's one of the more sort of COVID transmissible environments. And then you're also going to have the studios that they're super limited in the capacity. I think, you know, Sadie Lincoln, who runs Bar 3, said it well when she said, it won't really be group fitness. It's going to be more like small group personal training. And so I don't know how the studios are going to, you know, afford to be able to do that. So look, I think once there's a vaccine or a therapeutic, or we can get back to being able to gather without being concerned, the studios that can make it through, I think things will come back, and that need and that desire to work out in a community setting will be stronger than ever. It's just, you know, pushing through to get there. And then I think, you know, digital obviously is going to be a much bigger part of the mix now that people have tried it. They've realized that digital fitness is amazing. It can provide you with an incredible workout. You can get a lot of the community benefits, you know, as we've seen through Peloton and Obey and Aptiv. And there's so many fantastic digital platforms that do have that community built in. So I think that'll become a bigger piece of it. But I don't think any of us wants to see a world in which digital is the only option.
No, I think that's exactly right. I've been doing digital personal trainer a couple times a week, and we've made it work. But I go to this one boutique fitness place once a week. It's called Tone House. It's like a boot camp fitness.
Oh my God, that's place. So hard. That's like the hard. I brought my husband there. He didn't talk to me for a week afterwards.
Yeah, I'm the oldest dude in there by far. And like, you know, the guy in the back, but the place is, it does. It's such a great workout. And that feeling of community there, this is what I love about the place. It's more like people giving each other high fives, talking in the locker room prior, like everyone get, like, I miss that community so much. And like for me, like you just said, once there's a vaccine and once I feel comfortable, I want to go back to that. But I've also realized, you know what? Like if I have to do something virtually, or there's going to be a mix of it. And with that said, do you think that with your events now, business and retreat business, experience business, are you going to take things from what you're going through now? Have you thought about what your business might look like come the point when we do have a vaccine, like in terms of events and experiences?
Yeah. So for, actually it was interesting. I was just reading some Zoom data that there are 20,000 events getting registered every day on Zoom, and half of those are wellness focused. So there's so much digital content in the space, which is both really exciting, but then I think, you know, these were events that businesses were charging for before, and now it's, you right. know, all largely free. So for us, for Talks, which is this monthly series that we do where we bring together thought leaders around a specific topic, we did those in New York City, and we had capacity for about 100 people. And we've done our last two digitally, and we had over 600 people for both of those talks. We had people from 25 different countries. So that's amazing. And I think that's something that will definitely continue even when we can resume in person, is figure out how do we live stream that? How do we share it digitally? So that's a learning from this that we'll take with us. I think for retreats, we're trying to figure out right now how we could digitize that, because I do think people need and want to take a vacation right now during this.
Oh, like, God. Yeah.
You know, and even if, you know, you can't go anywhere, you can't like leave your home, it's how do we give people the, you know, the tools and content around a retreat so that they could do that for themselves at home. So we're trying to figure that piece out. We also have something called Studio Sessions, which is a series where we're trying to support the fitness studios as they get through this. And so we're partnering with different studios for Saturday morning workouts, and the proceeds go to a mental health charity that's doing work in the current pandemic, and then also to that studio to support them. Because I think there'll be a huge need to support these studios to make sure that they can get through this.
Yeah. Do you think, being an expert in this space, do you think a lot of this is going to come back and potentially come back stronger in terms of live events like retreats, these experiences? Do you think that people are going to be craving that more now?
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as it's safe, I mean, we've saw so much growth in all kinds of experiential events, from like large scale stuff like, you know, conferences, Coachella, whatever it is, in lots of different sort of areas of interest. Like, I think that's just like convening and being with people who share your interest and learning from experts. Like, I think all of that is going to come back stronger than ever as soon as people feel like it's safe. I mean, I think the economy will obviously play a role in that. This could be a really recession, a high unemployment environment. People are going to have less discretionary income. Yeah. But I think like long-term, the whole events business will come back stronger than ever. And, you know, I think now we'll all have this added expertise of knowing how to capture that content digitally in a really, you know, powerful way, so people who can't travel can take part.
Yeah, I love how as we talked about, ingenuity comes out of these crises, because I think you're exactly right. I think the live events and experience business, and especially with what you've built within wellness, is going to come back stronger than ever, but you're going to have the added benefit of not only doing, let's say, your live events and experiences for your room of a couple hundred people, but you're going to live stream in people as well from all over the world, which really sets you guys up, it seems like, for a lot of growth.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah. but yes, it's all, you know, it's all an experiment right now. And I think hopefully out of this, a lot of opportunities for new businesses will come too. I mean, in the last financial crisis, there were so many businesses that launched. And, you know, I think in times like right now, I know Melissa and I felt like this in 2009, it's like we had less to lose at that moment. Our livelihoods were changing. They weren't what they once were. So it was a really good time for us to sort of go for it with Well and Good. So yeah. And I think wellness will just be more and more important. And so it is a $4.5 trillion industry. There are still so many new ideas, innovations that can happen across the board, whether it's, you know, I mean, obviously sustainability is so massive in every category from athleisure to food to beauty. And I think the other really exciting thing is in the food category, I think we're seeing more and more focus around healthy, convenient foods. And so companies like Pepsi and Kraft and whatever transitioning their portfolios for a while, but I really see that accelerating even more now. And I think there's huge opportunity there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk sustainability. I'm taping another show today with the founder, Tim Brown of Allbirds, which is a shoe built completely. I mean, it's a great product, but it's with sustainability. And it's just amazing how much, and that's part of wellness. And it's just amazing how important it's become. And you just said it, and if you can give me a little kind of more on it, but why is wellness going to be, besides the obvious reasons, why is it going to be so important now more than ever?
Well, I think people who are already bought into this lifestyle, like, you know, just obviously be even more so. But, you know, I think we've all through COVID really realized how important it is to have a really strong immune system, how underlying conditions, you know, if you can prevent them, like there is reason to. You know, I think a lot of people I've seen in my own life, people who I never thought were going to start to exercise more or better, have through this transformed. So this has been, I think, a really powerful wellness wake-up call for a lot of people who just thought wellness is not for me. And I think also just talking about wellness as a set of practices, and you can find your own sort of wellness recipe. And for us, that's what the plus sign sort of is in the Well Plus Good, is it's the different healthy practices you can add, which might be meditation, which might be different types of fitness, different types of eating, different types of complementary and alternative health. And I think that people's wellness recipe can look really different throughout their lives. So at 25, what served you well, maybe didn't serve you at 36 and so on. And so you're constantly sort of tweaking that recipe. And wellness should never feel like imposed by an industry, but should be, you know, an individual finding those practices that work for him or her. So I think people just need to kind of see it in that super personalized lens and kind of like have fun with it. And I think there've never been like more options that are, you know, going back to the conversation about SoulCycle and how much fun it is to work out, but there are so many options in fitness and in healthy food. So it's just like trial and error and finding what you like. Because hey, for a long time, healthy food didn't taste so great. I mean, my mom had like the Moosewood cookbook and it was like mushy lentils and nothing was now, like, incredible. So yeah, there's been so much evolution.
Yeah, it's so great to see. When you were saying that, I just thought back to, you know, when I was in my 20s and I would go work out like 4 or 5 times a week at like New York Sports Club, my friends would look at me like I had like 2 heads, like, why are you even working out? And it's just so great to see what has happened and just the progression of not only understanding that exercise is so important, but really overall just how we take care of ourselves. And I think now with COVID, it's just such a clear indicator that that's so important. And always thinking like, shouldn't have that always been from the beginning, right? You know, like it's funny how things have changed.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think we're similar ages, but you know, I I was in New York in the 90s and it was like, it was not a healthy lifestyle. Like, you know, you're not going with your friends to swim classes. And I look at millennials and what their social life is like. And so much of it centers around health and doing 10Ks together and grabbing a fitness class and then a juice. And I'm like, oh, it's fantastic.
I am like you. I was born in, I totally, and it's funny when I go to like Tone House and some, my other, you know, Barry's I'll do, it's always with friends from work who are millennials and like they're in their 20s, early 30s. And like, I'm so jealous. Like that is the lifestyle I always wanted. But like you said, New York in the 90s was like, I'm going out drinking, you know, like I'll work out, but like no one wanted to do that.
No, that was like super fringe. And so now it's great to see that the mainstream is so much more healthy. Yeah.
Yeah. Give us in the time we have left, what is the opportunities now you're going to take from what we're going through? And where do you see Well and Good going in the next, you know, I hate to put many years, but in the next couple years of where you want to be as a business?
Yeah. So we just launched something called Well Plus, which is a community of sort of our most engaged readers. And what it is a special newsletter that we do for them when they, and it goes to people who refer their friends to Well and Good. And so we've created this whole program around referral awards and then also special perks that this community gets. And we're really excited about it because A, we wanted to do more to serve our most engaged readers. And we also want to like use it as a place that we start testing more premium offerings, you know, and eventually down the line might look at doing some kind of, you know, membership or subscription. Because Robert, I think it's going to be really important for any media company that's going to thrive in the next decade, that they have that direct relationship with their reader and that their reader is paying in some way for the content. So we saw this start to happen with you know, major national publications like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. We're all getting conditioned now to pay for that content.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're starting to see that come into like lifestyle publications, like, you know, New York Magazine has a paywall when you read more than 5 articles a month. And, you know, it's not a lot of money, but hey, it you know, certainly adds up when you have hundreds of thousands of people. So I think digital is important. And then, so the genie was sort of let out of the bottle. People were taught not to value the digital journalism, right? Because they were monetizing through print.
Yeah.
And so we're only, I think now kind of righting the ship a little bit and teaching people, hey, you've got to pay for content. These are professional journalists rigorously reporting and writing this stuff. And advertising is just not going to support the writing that we all need and want.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that because when, with that said, I always was, I'm just, you know, there's so much content out there. I'm not going to pay for any subscriptions. And this was my thought for like a year or two. And I've gone completely the opposite because I've realized that I rather pay for good journalism and really good content. And that's what I've done because there is such a discrepancy. And I think for you guys and moving forward, as I said, I'm an avid reader of Well and Good. Now, I just think that's a great spot for you because your content is super interesting, super valuable. And you really, as much content as is out there for wellness and like, it's true. I think that's really a smart move just in terms of understanding that right now. And I think a lot of brands are going towards that, you know, as we've seen other publications.
Yeah. So I think we'll see a lot of niche media brands start to feel their way, test their way towards a model where, you know, there's some content that's offered for free and, you know, at a certain point you pay. So I think we'll start to see a lot of tests there across the board. And it goes back to our conversation around SoulCycle in a way. It's like, you know, Julie and Elizabeth were like...
And Ruth.
Were,
we had her. I had Ruth on the podcast and I love her. And anyway.
Okay. So all three of them, when they launched and they put a $32 price tag on a fitness class, people thought, oh my God, this is crazy. And their point was, hey, you value what you pay for. So I think it's important for content creators to value what they're creating in whatever way, you know, makes sense. And, you know, I just want to see content like grow and thrive. And I want to see journalists be able to make great livings. So I'm really hopeful for the industry, but I think all of us as content consumers have to, you know, put in our credit card digits when we're reading this great content.
Yeah. No, I think that's the best way to go in terms of businesses and just to get the best content you can. And I just, in closing, so appreciate you coming on. As I've said, I've had a lot of guests on this show, but you are like one of my idols who I've read about because I love the space. I love what you've done. I just think it's so difficult to build a media brand as well, as opposed to, even though it's more than a media brand now, that what you've done. And I'm so excited to see what you're able to build on, because I do really think that you have built a community just like the SoulCycles and the Barrys, and like people really want that and they feel that from Well and Good.
Thank you. Robert, it is such an honor to be here and to talk to you. So thank you so much for letting me share the Well and Good story.
Well, we appreciate it and look forward to talking to you more in the future. And I'm sure the business is just going to grow a lot bigger.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.